Now, Timmy McMahon, you're very welcome to Scariff Bay Community Radio. And you,
thank you very much. Thank you.
You're here with me, and it's my great pleasure to be talking to you today in O'Callaghan's Mills. We're sitting at the kitchen table here, and you were, from a few years ago, you started into writing poetry, Timmy, and this has been, would you say, a passion of yours when you got going with it, or what drew you to it?
Well, I said, you know, Tony, I never wrote anything in my life.
Mm-hmm.
But going to national school, I had a kind of a liking to essays. And it is one subject at school that I was pretty good at.
Did you ever keep any of them?
No. There'd be a simple essay like A Day in the Bog or A Day
yes.
Fishing. Or,
yeah, very good.
But there's one, to the only area, actually, going to school, that I kind of was happy with.
Yeah.
And my teacher often complimented me on stories that I'd write and compositions that were called that time.
You remember that?
Oh, I do, yeah. Mm. And Irish especially.
Oh.
Yeah, Lars of Portugal, you know, La Geistgrut. I could write a good composition.
Oh,
and it's probably I had that little creative thing in me, but I never continued it.
Yeah.
And I'd be often at home with a Byron, I'd be jotting down things. I loved words that would rhyme.
Yes.
I had no interest in poetry that wouldn't rhyme.
Mm.
But anything that would rhyme, I loved it.
Mm.
And I thought that brings me to this then. I had a great friend, one of my best friend I could call him, Taddy O'Loughlin from Corofin.
Yes.
And myself and Taddy were of the same vintage, same age, and we had the same outlook in life and the same passions in life. We hurled together and we fished together, we went out shooting together, we did everything together.
Yes.
And we could relate to one another in everything outdoor. And unfortunately, the poor man passed away 4 years ago, mm-hmm. died in his sleep. And I was left devastated.
Mm, that hit you.
Devastated and lonely, and I felt that I had nobody to relate to or to talk to that would really understand.
On that level.
Mm. So I felt then obliged or compelled, whatever you want to say, to
that's a good word.
Write a little poem about him, on his memory, and something that I could have for myself.
Yeah.
And pass on maybe to his family and friends that knew him so well, because he was very liked in the village of Corfin. He was very well respected and very liked. So I put pen to paper, and it took me well over a year before I finished it.
Mm. So it was a fair effort.
It was a big effort, and it cost me a lot of hours sleep because I'd been lying in bed and I'd
be thinking
something would come in and I'd jump out and I'd put on the light and I'd write a little bit and back to sleep again. And
oh, would you go back to sleep?
I would, yeah.
Like some more of us, very good.
Yeah, sometimes. But yeah, eventually I got it finished and my sister Mary typed it.
Very good.
And you'd like to hear it?
Well, sure, give it a go anyway. Why not? It'd be lovely to hear it. Lovely to hear it.
Thank you.
Okay, Timmy.
My friend, Toddy. The dark clouds have gathered and we linger long and low. For I have lost my faithful friend, I was so privileged to know. He passed away so quietly, no time to say goodbye, but he left 1,000 memories that I'll cherish till I die. Toddy led a simple life, so interesting and quite rare. He pursued his hobbies all through life, without a worry or a care. He had a passion for the outdoor life, exploring all things new. We often wondered how one small head could carry all he knew. Toddy was a handyman, a plasterer by trade, but was never seen to shy away from a shovel or a spade. He was never seen to overcharge, help those who were not able, and in his honest, humble way, he put food upon the table. Times are tough, conditions rough, money's scarce, I'm afraid. But a bonus was his 4 fine sons all took up the trade. Toddy enjoyed a game of cards, a pint, a fag, the crack. So often on a weekend, he would head for Bridie Max. The regular crew would be there, always bang on time. Yaman, Josie and the Gorts, his father, and Tom Pine. The cracket would be mighty, the place packed from wall to wall. Then somebody would start the song without being asked at all. Mick McDonough in the corner beating on a tray, you would hear his voice ringing out a half a mile away. He would sing for us brave Donnelly with his drawl and ethnic voice. Then he'd load his pistol before he'd roll his dice. Josie would go in search of his star. He would sail the blue ocean of Tomalabar. When he'd get his breath back, his ink could be seen with his gun on his back heading for Skibbereen. Tarry would give us the green hills of Clare. The nobody's child would ring through the air. As the night would wear on, he would leave us all wake when he'd sing a few verses of Ned Flaherty's Drake. Not a care in the world, no thought of tomorrow. With pints of the black stuff, we would drown out our sorrow. He would talk for hours on ending of his beloved Inchiquin, of the founders caught around Castle Bay, and the big one that got away. His knowledge of that aquatic life was both accurate and thorough, and surely could have shared some tips with David Attenborough.
Very good.
He could cast a fly with any man that ever held the rod. He never had to buy a fly. His own hand did the job. Our fishing gear was simple, 10 yards of strong brown line, a bamboo rocked from the Delphi house, or a scallop from Craig Bryan. 2 yards of goat, a box of hooks, all from Murphy's store, and a jam jar full of bluehead worms to go up the night before. We would fish the River Fergus from Paul Gorham to Loch Yock, fill our bags with eels and trout and perch to a big and fat. We would share our catch with neighbours and how glad what they ate that, and any spats left over would be given to the cat. The cats, they were like bonnets, not a thing one to be seen, with fish for breakfast, dinner, supper, and the odd snack in between. The first day of September, for Tarry's special date, is signalled the start of the shooting year, and eagerly he would wait. He would search for cock at Willbrook, Paul Cameron and Craig Bryan, shoot snipe along Shandangan, or a goose at Sean O'Brien's. He knew the parish through and through, every crag and every lake. The best place was to flush a cock, a pheasant, or a drake. Tarry enjoyed a night out of the flesh, with his faithful dog Trilly and his big black dog Dash. He would go to Riask Lahan, where he spent half the night, where Widgeon, Teal and Mallard in their thousands would be in flight. Often on a Sunday, if we had no match to play, we would put our plans in motion for a rabbit hunting day. We would cycle to the Scales's, now known as Father Ted's. We would climb the Schlee of Nadlusha, which brought us to the bed. There we'd hunt them in Billgraziers, and we always got a few, which would keep our mothers happy, making pots of rabbit stew. Tarry's love of training dogs played a big part in his life. He could be seen in solitude with his student by his side. He never raised his hand in anger, maintained there was no need. All was required was a coaxing voice, a whistle, and a lead. When Paulina first came to her house, he was first inside her door. He wished her luck and happiness in her humble new abode, placed the present on the table. As he left, I heard him say, "If there's anything or help you need, I am only down the way." Hurling it underage level is at an all-time high. Some outstanding talent has emerged under Joe Carr's watchful eye. The Emmett was Tarry's idol. No one could take his place, his hurling brain, his skillful touch, and especially his pace. He always said he'd play for Clare. His words that have come true. He's in the county colours now, the saffron and the blue. Often when the game was close and our backs were to the wall, one would hear him say, "We're saved again. The wizard has the ball." Tarry was a brilliant hurler, as good as ever graced the field, with skill and strength and courage, and a mind that would not yield. He never took a backward step, never saw him to back down. He pulled on every ball that came in the air and on the ground. The taffs, the leaves, the watches were Tubbers real hard men. If you put your foot inside the square, you would know that they were there. Sometimes the pulling would be fierce, often a free-for-all. That's when Tarry pulled his best were always on the ball. But being the sportsmen these men were, they never left the field without a handshake, as to say, we'll meet again another day. 69, it was our greatest year. We won the Junior Crown. By the rolling hills of Tulla, we took Killinane down. Toddy had a brilliant day, won 5 from freeze and 3 from play. As good as Shane O'Donnell on All-Ireland Day. Then back to the little village, with bonfires blazing high, where her men cried with happiness, and we drank the parish dry. Toddy's love of films, Toddy loved his films, with Western being his choice. He could trace each one in detail, imitate each actor's voice. Shane, the Dirty Dozen, Through Grit and Shenandoah were some of the greatest classics. He enjoyed them over and over. He did maintain John B. as the field, with the best he ever seen, with Harris Hurt McGinley, the widow, and Sean Bean. Toddy, how I miss you with your kind and gentle ways. Your visit meant so much to me when my life was dark and grey. That was many years ago, and I'm happy now to say things have improved a thousandfold, and I thank you every day. We'll meet again, we'll huddle again, we'll fish and shoot a brace, but I hope I have some time to go before I see your face. Gine.
Thank you very much, Timmy. Lovely. Lovely. Yeah. Did it, in writing it over the course of the year, did it, would you say overall, help the feelings that you had towards him or about him? I mean, the grief, and then I was just wondering when you started to say how much you missed him. It must have been, or was it a relief to write it?
Well, it was. It's something I can look back on and read and read. And it brings back the memories vividly, you know. Things I'll never forget, right? But I will never forget him, whether I wrote it or I didn't write it, you know.
Yeah.
He was unique, a unique person.
You were obviously very close.
Very close, yeah. And he was a personal friend, along with being a friend for fishing and shooting. He was a friend that I could speak to. And I went through some rough patches in my life with alcoholism and things. Mm. And I could talk to Toddy about it.
You mentioned the fact that he was inclined to coax people rather than to force them or to...
he was very kind. He was very kind.
We got him across. Yeah.
We got involved in the national school training of the underage and the school kids.
All right.
And the principal asked myself and Toddy to know to get involved. And so we gelled perfectly. And it was beautiful. He had a lovely way with kids, you know, and they'd be running out in the field and they'd say, Toddy, will you tie my boot? And he put out his knee and he said, leave it up there, you know, and he tied the boot and he'd brand that helmet and he'd, you know, we had a fabulous time with him and never had a wrong word with any of them. There was no need. They were lovely kids and we got on great and we won a Division 4 inside in Cusick Park.
Nice.
And to the highlight nearly of my career, and I huddled for 30 years, you know, to be part of it, you know.
Linked in with himself, yeah, very good. What did you call his dog?
He had two dogs, Trilly and Dash.
Oh, Trilly. Very good. Dash. What kind of dogs were there?
He had a Springer Spaniel and a Labrador. Yeah.
Very good.
Ah, great man.
Yeah. And a strong sense of the different areas in the locality around Corrifin as well is very, very strong. It's very, very important, isn't it, to know your patch?
Of course, yeah.
That's very strong.
Just the people around here won't be able to identify with.
Well, there might be a few players. You mentioned Father Ted's house, but it's McCormack's now, isn't it?
Yeah.
Who was there before?
Dick Scales.
Right.
To Scales' house.
It's a big house, of course.
A big house, big two-story house.
Scales.
And at the back of it,
yeah,
it was Schlieff and Russia.
I heard of it, yeah.
Yeah, and we'd go there, we'd cycle there.
Okay.
Or we'd cycle, bicycles,
yeah,
and bring the dogs with us. And Toddy might have a ferret.
Yeah.
And we'd climb to Schlieff and Russia. It was a long climb and a hard climb. And then when you got to the top, you could look down and it was known as the bed.
Right.
And I think, if you might know, the Glass Eye Nut was a cow that was supposed to produce milk. She could fill any vessel. That was the folklore. And somebody brought her a strainer.
Right.
And milked the milk into the strainer. And it formed a patch in the ground.
Right.
And it's still there, to the present day, this bare patch of ground.
Can't be seen.
Nothing ever grew after the milk.
Say no more.
And that was the bed. It was known as the bed.
Uh-huh.
And so there we would shoot and ferret and for the rabbits.
That's a little bit like when you were telling that story, a little bit like the place we're in at the minute, the townland is called, well, in Irish to be Clun Lum, Clon Laum. And I've never been able to figure it out. Some people say, well, in translation from the Irish would be meadow, bare meadow. Right? Okay. So you'd be inclined to think when you'd come across the word bare lum, the land wouldn't be good. You see, it would be very, there wouldn't much grow on it. But then if I said to people, well, that could be because the cattle, you see, were so delighted in eating the good.
So luscious, yeah.
Yes, that they ate it down to the ground.
Okay.
But yeah, some of our listeners, no doubt now, would be familiar with the area you're talking about. I've been up there recently with, there's a man who has a farm near McCormick there, Harry Eucan. You can walk around it.
I know the man.
Interesting man. So we've been up there.
Yeah, very interesting man.
Yeah. Yeah. So you can do the loop around the farm and that kind of thing.
Actually, up the Green Road, yeah.
That's right. Lovely part of the world.
Yeah. I know it well, yeah.
Well, now, you have... you have something else you might like to share?
A little poem I wrote it last spring.
This is in relation to the coming of spring? Yeah, that'd be great.
The coming of spring,
powerful,
yeah.
Powerful.
And,
okay, Timmy, in your own time.
It's a simple little one. Yeah. Short and simple.
Very good. Simple is good.
Spring is here in all its glory. Flowers abound from every nook. Birds are nesting in the wildwood. Robins, sparrows, finches, rook. All the fields are white with daisies, buttercup and hyacinth blue, daffodils in rows unending, opening their eyes for the morning dew. In the fields the lambs are bleating, mothers tend their every need. Newborn calves are anxious mothers, standing still while they have their feed. Newborn foals that course the paddocks, proud owners look on, they hope and pray. Maybe answer is daunting fences, or the curra on Derby Day. We say goodbye to the curlew's cry, widgeon teal and golden eye. We scan the sky in hope each day to see a swallow or a swift come our way. It's a time of new beginning. It's a time we hope and pray that God will gift us with good health so we can enjoy each given day.
Each given day. Say no more. You've obviously a big connection with nature, and that's coming across in every aspect of your
your
chats.
I love nature. I love to be out, just to see things and observe, and I love gardening as well.
Gardening is a big passion for you as well.
Yeah, I love gardening, and
I heard on the sidelines that roses. You have a big affinity for roses.
I have.
That come about her.
Well, I'll tell you now, it's strange, but there was a show in Corrifin, an agricultural show, years and years ago. That's what it's 40 to 50 years ago. And Tony and myself were there at the show. And there was a man selling roses. And we bought three roses each.
Mm.
I bought a yellow, a red, and a white.
Okay.
And I don't know what Teddy bought. But I went home and I saw my three roses. And the three of them grew and produced beautiful blooms.
Very good.
And I don't know about Teddy's now, what Teddy did with his. But I can't ask him now. But I still, to the present day, I have two of those roses, rose bushes. Right. Now, I did a bit of renovation in my cottage years ago and the man with the JCB uprooted one.
Mm.
And I couldn't get it to come again.
Yeah.
But I still have those two bushes.
Two of them, yeah.
Yeah, they must be 50 years old.
My God.
And they're brilliant.
My
brilliant
God.
Roses. One is a tea rose beautiful red rose, and the other is the yellow. I think they're 2D roses.
And
I still have them.
Gorgeous.
Yeah, gorgeous, yeah. And I was lucky enough, later in life, I met a beautiful lady from Belarus.
Right.
Previous to that, I had been married, but we had been separated, and I was on my own, and I met her by chance. And I turned out that she was the most wonderful creature that ever stood in two shoes. A beautiful, caring lady.
Was she into the roses?
She started to get into the roses with me, and we started to go to the shows together.
Right.
And we got prizes all over the county.
Really?
Yes. And there was one particular rose, it was a competition, well, it was part of the agricultural show, to the Charlie Hanrahan Perpetual Cup for a single rose,
right.
Single tea rose.
Okay.
And we tried and tried for years to win it, and we could never get there. But there was one particular rose we had at home, and she was minding this rose, and she said, "I'll win the cup this year," she said. And this red rose, and she minded it and minded it, and the night before the show, she went out and she covered it with an umbrella in case of rain, and tied the umbrella down over it, and picked it the following morning, brought it into the show in a vase, and the hall was open at 1 o'clock for visitors to go in and check their produce. So we went in, and there was the red rosette on the rose.
There you are.
Very good. First prize in it.
First prize,
and
good.
The cup.
Yeah.
And it just goes to show what perseverance can do, you know.
Yes, that's a good lesson in the word perseverance, I suppose, yeah. Keep on going at it. Very good.
Yeah.
Very good. Very good. Well, I suppose our time is nearly at an end with the bit of a chat we've had. Is there anything else you'd like to add around Hurling or nature or Corrifin itself or your own life?
Well, my own life, it's so varied now and so many ups and downs in it. It would take a long time, but in general, right, in general, I hadn't a very, very pleasant experience at school, national school particularly.
Mm.
But I'd like to talk about it in more detail again.
Mm-hmm.
But I got over that side of it anyway, and I was very insecure, with no self-confidence, no self-esteem, very low self-esteem. And a lot of it was brought on from my days at national school. When you'd be told often enough and long enough that you were a fool and a plight, he called me, and an Amadon, and I don't know how many more names he had on me, but not only me, but on every student. So if you're told long enough, it'll stick eventually. And I left school with very, very low self-esteem.
How did you get over that, or by that, or through that?
It took a long time, Tony, and when I found release then in the one thing I found release in, and that was the bottle. I found it when I had a few drinks taken in my early teens, that I was as good as the next person. I thought I was. It gave me that false courage to talk and to relate and to do this, do that, go dancing, meet women, dance, sing, do anything. I could do anything with drink. But eventually that turned sour too. And it became a crutch. And the crutch became so strong that I had to have it. I could, 3 hours as long as I could go without a drink. So eventually, to make a long story short, I asked for help, and I asked a neighbour of mine to bring me for help of a Monday morning. So I went into a psychiatric ward in Innes, course over, no drink, and I met a wonderful man, Dr. Power, and he asked me to stay for a week or a fortnight, And it was an awful decision to make. A very, very, very difficult decision.
Mm-hmm.
I was at home with my mother, an only son.
Mm-hmm.
I had two sisters, and she knew I was in trouble, but she didn't really know the ins and outs of alcoholism.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to tell my neighbour to go home and tell my mother that I'd be staying. And it was the hardest decision I ever made. And I remember walking down the steps, the stone steps, down to his car.
Mm.
And I told him, I said, I won't be going home, Philip, I said.
Mm.
And he looked up at me and, you know, I could see the fear and the in his eyes, you know.
Mm.
But it was the best move I ever made. Even though I didn't get sober for maybe 3-4 years after.
Took a while, yeah.
It took a while and a terrible struggle.
Mm.
And I finished up in Dublin in St. John of God's.
Okay.
And I did the unit there for alcoholism. And that's 48 years ago.
Okay.
And I haven't had a drink since.
Just, yeah.
A day at a time.
Mm, one day at a time.
Yeah, and I'm only an arm's length away from a drink.
Mm.
And if I take one, I don't know, labour. Is there another recovery? I know there's another drink in me, but I don't know if there's another recovery.
Yeah.
So since then, I've had a wonderful life.
Mm.
A beautiful, contented life.
It sounds it.
Yeah. And every time something small will happen. Didn't the big things in life today that give me a buzz at all is the small things, Tony.
Mm.
I remember when I got my first car, £140 that time, for a little Morris Minor. It gave me a lift. Then I was able to get a little job. Small things fell into place.
Bit by bit.
Yeah. When I was drinking, I had only one of everything. I was able to have two of everything when I stopped drinking. Two pairs of shoes, two pencils.
Yeah.
I had only one of everything.
Yeah.
So since then, thank God, a day at a time, I've had a wonderful, contented, happy life. Very with the knocks along the way. I lost my girlfriend last May.
Right.
And
sorry to hear that.
Yeah, I lost my girlfriend through cancer, and it's still very raw.
Mm.
But I'm starting to cope with it, and she's there with me. I know she's with me all the time.
Mm.
She'll never leave me, you know. And I want to thank Eileen. She was tremendous help to me during that time.
Eileen. Did the chauffeur bringing you up down to O'Callaghan's Mills today?
Yeah, she was wonderful, outstanding. I remember that we went to Cork to collect her. She was after having an operation in her brain, and she took her home. And we thought we were going to lose her and throw her home, but we didn't. But for that, I'm eternally grateful to Eileen. You know?
Very good.
So that's it, Tony, basically.
Thank you very much indeed, Timmy. That was a pleasure.
Thank you so much. Thanks for talking. Thank you too. Yeah.